Welcome back to Mountain Money. The time is now 9:30. I'm Renee Bodley Miller here with my guest co-host Roger Goldman. And joining us in studio this morning is Dr. Phil Davidson. Lots of people know him as the Park City orthopedic surgeon here in town. He is also the CEO of Coracoid Solutions. He was just telling us about it, an early stage medical device company focused on sports medicine procedures, currently developing unique tools and implants to better address joint dislocation. And Dr. Davidson, you said it's mostly for separated shoulders. Is that right?
Yeah, correct. The condition we're addressing with the Coracoid Solutions products is the historically been called a shoulder separation, but it's actually a dislocation of the collarbone. And that historically has been very poorly addressed. The solutions that are out there, the procedures that are done, unfortunately, are fraught with complications and failures. And so together with some colleagues of mine about 3 years ago, we set out to try and build a better mousetrap. We wanted to make something that was going to be safer to implement, more effective, and ultimately, if we can accomplish those things, then better.
How do you develop a product like that? Obviously, you know, you need to figure out first you have to come up in theory, how does it do it? But then you have to actually, do it on people.
Yeah, who's the guinea pig?
How do you do that, Phil?
Yeah, no, you know, Renee, you asked about guinea pig. That's later down the road. The guinea pigs come later. I'll start with Roger's question because that's a good question. And so the first thing we did was identify a problem that we felt wasn't being adequately addressed by the current standards. And fortunately and intentionally, I have a group of really respected colleagues and friends, and we literally sit in a room with a big whiteboard in front, and we say, okay, so we all agree that this is an issue. And then we make a list of, you know, things that we believe we can accomplish, and then we refine that list to things in our ideal product before we've actually done any product development, what are the things we have to have with our new solution? What are the things we'd like to have? What are the things we might have? And then we sit with, again, we have trusted and experienced engineers we work with and say, okay, I'm thinking about doing it this way. Is that feasible from either a manufacturing standpoint, a regulatory standpoint? When you develop medical products, it's not like doing a new part for bicycles. The FDA, Federal Drug Administration, has a medical device oversight, and you have to develop your products with approval of the FDA in mind. So it's a very complex, but on the other hand, intellectually rewarding for someone like myself and my co-inventors and partners. It's very rewarding. Here we started this project 3 years ago, and just this past week, 1 week ago, 6 days ago, we implanted our first device in mankind, and that's hugely rewarding, very exciting for our conceptual idea to actually be now in patients.
Wait, that's some breaking news here. You did it for the first time 6 days ago, but when did you start working on this?
About 3 years.
Which I think is actually pretty quick as these things go.
Yeah, we met with a six-month delay at the end of our development cycle, having to do with, it gets a little bit detailed here, but you have to validate the sterilization. So our product was approved by the FDA almost 2 years ago. But then you have to take the manufactured pieces, assemble them in a factory. We use a medical device packaging and assembly company in Pittsburgh called Cadence, and they're well known by the FDA. They're well known by the industry. Even though we're a very small company, they're a big company. And Cadence, it took them 6 months to get our final product approved so that when the surgeon and the surgical staff peels it open at the time of surgery, that they're guaranteed the validity of the sterility. So that took 6 months more than expected, but otherwise it was the project's been relatively seamless.
This is a business show, and one of the interesting things about understanding how a product like this becomes widely accepted, marketed, and hopefully profitable, is because it's a process and a product. Talk a little bit about the surgeon education element that would have to go into making this work. How do you do that?
Right. So, to your point, the fact that it's a business, the value that we have is that we have intellectual property, meaning patents filed. Patents take forever in this day and age to issue, many years. But our patent portfolio protects our idea. So when we go out to surgeons and share this with them, and we've showed it to dozens, they're very enthusiastic and excited. But they can't go back to their machine shop and create our product because of our intellectual property portfolio protects us. That's the U.S. Patent Trade Office.
So are they signing a non-disclosure agreement, so they're not sharing that idea with somebody else?
It's not necessary at this point.
Okay.
If someone sought to copy our product, then we would have legal recourse. Mm. And, I mean, I guess there are some manufacturers or individuals or countries that might do that. But for the most part, we're protected if you play by the rules.
And part of what I was getting at, and this may not be true, is with some medical devices, the ability to train the physician is as important as the device itself.
Yeah, that's hugely important. You guys bring up a bunch of good points, but all at once.
Sorry.
No apology.
Let's break it down.
I'm excited about this topic, as you can tell.
We love the passion.
So, I'll tell you, at 3 o'clock today, I'm flying to Reno to train a surgeon, and tomorrow she's putting it in. It's dependent upon the utilization of new surgical technology, not just in orthopedics and not just the coracoid solution, is dependent upon other physicians, not just teaching the how to, but the why, the when not to. Surgical education is completely dependent upon surgeons to convey that. So, I mean, there's salespersons that can help, but ultimately surgeons share insight with other surgeons, and that's how surgical education takes place. You know, the vast majority of things I do now in the operating room didn't exist when I was in my training, and so the way I've learned is through other surgical courses and through educational efforts of surgeons.
So when you are looking for a surgeon, that's probably a question you should ask. How do you keep up to speed on your training?
Yes, and it's actually mandated within orthopedics. I can't speak to other fields of study because I don't know what their requirements are. But the basis with orthopedics to maintain what's called board certification is a documented commitment to continuing education. There's some testing required, but more important than the testing is if your surgeon or orthopedist is board certified, that means that they're on this 10-year cycle of continuing education. And each year you have to demonstrate that you've attended courses, that you've taken these seminars, and it's not just about incorporating new techniques, but understanding the fund of knowledge that it's an information age. I mean, we have to keep up.
And you strike me as someone who's very passionate about this subject. You seem to really enjoy the intellectual aspect of it. But as Roger said, we're a business show. So how do you know you're going to make money off of it?
So I guess the way it's a multi-step. So focusing on the business aspect, the formation of a company like this, and my team and I have done this several times before. So the idea is you identify an unmet need, and then you create, before the company is launched, a theoretical pathway. And the pathway in medical products has to go through, I mentioned earlier, the FDA and regulatory. There's different ways to conduct a regulatory pathway. And if your device is brand new, never been done before, you know, like in the 1960s, artificial heart, then very extensive and expensive testing is required. Whereas our product, while we think and we assert that it's quite novel and new and game-changing, there's some relative predicates in the market, things that are kind of like it that are in use. And so on that basis, the FDA allows us to use that, and we call it a 510K pathway, to introduce this into the market without having to undergo literally millions and millions of dollars of testing.
Okay.
And so we look at the economic viability. How many of these units will be sold? What are they going to be sold for? What's the initial investment required? What's the subsequent valuation? And so that modeling, we did all that modeling. Having said that, it's still risky. There's more failed ventures like this than there are successful ventures like this.
Well, you're a working surgeon, so how do you have the time to do this? Or does your group hire somebody who is sort of the navigator of this process for you?
So we have two. I guess the answer is my golf game suffers. I don't play much golf. We have two full-time employees, a COO, and an engineer that works with him hand in hand in an office in California. And then we have a co-founder and I, and we touch the product, touch the company, work on this almost every day, but kind of in our spare time, if you will. Everyone's passionate about it and committed to the project, and that's how we handle it, as a matter of you set your own priorities, whether you're a busy professional like Roger when he was working full-time in the law firm. You set your own priorities as a professional, and this is a priority project for me and my partners.
My golf game has since improved. at a 50,000-foot level, just out of curiosity, is there a way that you can characterize what's different about this approach for a lay audience? In other words, what are we doing here that's different at a very simple level?
Yeah, so, and that's a good question. So the historic procedures to treat this condition involve drilling holes in two bones, one the clavicle and the other, it's called the coracoid, hence the name of the company. And drilling those holes was fraught with danger. It's a difficult angle. The bones can be small. The bones can be fragile. The bones can break. And we came up with a solution that involves no hole drilling. So we're able to go around the bones, which was historically difficult. So we invented a way to get around the bones safely. And once you're around the bones safely, then our device or prosthesis fixates this dislocation or sets this dislocation in place with a way that we think has advantageous methods. So, I mean, it's still a lot of jargon, but...
Is it kind of like a clamp?
It's kind of like a belt.
A belt,
with a
okay.
fancy proprietary buckle.
Okay.
It's a weave, and the weave has special characteristics that make it stiff in certain ways and flexible in other ways. And then the buckle has cool characteristics where you can set the prosthesis in the buckle so it holds steady. You can then have a few minutes to make an X-ray. And if you like the positioning, then lock the buckle in place. And thus far, to the few dozen surgeons that we've shown this to, there's tons of enthusiasm.
And I know you do a lot of sports medicine work. Do you think that a post-reconstructed shoulder with this kind of device will be able to stand up to the rigors of an athletic pursuit, or do we know yet?
Yeah, so what we're doing is we're reconstructing this joint, and once it's appropriately in place, then the body's own soft tissues heal. So our prosthesis after 6 months is essentially doing nothing.
Right.
You could take it out if it was bothersome. I don't think it will be bothersome in most patients, and it'll probably remain for their whole life. But after 6 months, the body's tissues, and this is a fundamental way in which a lot of surgeries are conducted, we put things in place so the body can heal. And once the body's healed, the things we've used, the prostheses, the rods, the plates, the screws, the belts, the implants, then they're not doing anything.
So we should have you back in 6 months' time.
Yeah, I guess we'll have some results.
Yeah, and say that person who had the first device put in May, how are they doing?
Well, we collect that data. So we call that, you know, our clinical validation series is the fancy name for our first 10 patients. And so right now we're collecting the clinical validation series.
Well, we have just a few minutes left in our time with you. What other trends, new developments are you seeing as an orthopedic surgeon?
So outside of this company, I guess what we're seeing is there's a lot of exciting trends, but one that's coming to my attention that's coming into play this year is nanotechnology. And nanotechnology is coming into play in a couple different ways. One is, and I was asked to consult on this project about 5 years ago, is that there are certain injectables that are bound. So the active molecule of the injectable, in this case a steroid, can be bound to another molecule, and that molecule might, for example, in the case of a steroid, keep it in the joint. So we've done joint steroid injections for many, many decades, and that diffuses away and is gone in a couple weeks. Mm-hmm. And so now using this nanotechnology, if we bind the steroid to a particle that for different reasons will stay in the joint for a few months, so we're seeing that increase the efficacy of this injection. Other nanotechnologies would be that certain metals, you can bind molecules to metals and give characteristics such as prevention of infection or improved bone ingrowth. And so I think some of the general scientific trends we're seeing are being applied in orthopedics, and it's very exciting.
And you get steroids in the joint to reduce inflammation generally, right?
Yes, yes.
And so that would go a long way if you could get it to stay there longer.
Yeah, so what's happening now is an injection that used to last a few weeks can last several months.
Wow. So who normally gets this injury that you're talking about with the collarbone?
The dislocation, yeah. Mountain bikers and snowboarders. So it's a...
We've got so you're in the perfect marketplace.
Yeah. We do see a lot. The other a group of patients that get this... are people involved in vehicle accidents because the safety harness, right? We all have shoulder harnesses in our cars.
Oh, yeah.
The harness comes right over the clavicle. Yeah. And so as the body is thrust forward in an accident, that they call the acromioclavicular joint or the AC joint, because that's so hard to say, the AC joint becomes dislocated. So vehicle accidents, probably even more commonly than snowboarders and mountain bikers. But in Park City, it's going to be mountain bikes and snowboards.
We've been talking to Dr. Phil Davidson. You strike me as somebody with a lot of energy. So now that you've successfully finished this project, what's next?
Oh, I don't know. I think we need to we need to take our baby into the public domain right now.
Yeah.
And so the way that this company, back to Roger's question earlier, you know, this is a business. So what happens is that there are large orthopedic companies, and these large companies, you know, they're publicly listed and publicly traded companies. They don't do innovation like this well. That's not their charge. That's not their strength. So they acquire companies like ours, and our company is built to sell. And so at some point in the coming year or two, we would hope and expect that somebody will see the value in what we're doing and acquire this company. But we need to nurture it along. And meanwhile, we vet ideas, and people bring us ideas. But our team is really committed to this project right now. And I would think that within the next 6 or 12 months, we'll launch another company.
And hopefully we'll have you back on then and talk about it then.
We would like that. Thanks for taking the time to spend with us, Dr. Davidson.
Thanks, Lizzie. Thanks, Roger.